Hi, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm interested in talking to people who are interested in talking to people who are interested in having a conversation about their future. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. I'm very excited to welcome today to Recruiting Trailblazers, Jerry McMillan. He's the Director of Technical Recruiting at ClickUp, who've built an all-singing, all-dancing productivity and task management platform that's now trusted by millions of users around the world. He leads a team of incredibly talented technical recruiters, sources, and coordinators, and is responsible for leading global international hiring across engineering, product, and design. Now, Jerry got his start in agency, as so many other TA professionals did. He actually spent 6 years at Proven Recruiting at San Diego. So welcome to the podcast, Jerry McMillan.
Marcus, thank you for having me.
Yeah, excellent. I'm so glad we managed to make this happen. You came from the agency world, as I just mentioned, but you were there for quite a long time with the same company for like 6.5 years. What was the hardest part of adjusting to the internal recruiter role coming from agency?
One of the best parts about being an agency is you have multiple clients, and if you don't end up liking a client, go out and get another one. The internal piece is no matter what you do, you are not able to fire your clients. So you have to find ways to work with individuals that maybe you butt heads with at times, but it has infinitely increased my patience and my ability to work with more people. So it was overall a very positive experience and move for me.
Yeah. So as an internal recruiter, you better work for a brand that you love, because otherwise you'll be telling lies all day long.
Yeah. Thankfully, I've joined some really, really amazing companies. ServiceNow, when I joined them, they were 8,000 people. And when I left, they were 24,000. And I lived and breathed platform engineering, some of the best leaders that I've ever worked with. And then coming to ClickUp, it is a 900-person company that has very different challenges. But I work with some of the most intelligent people I've ever worked with in my career. So I've gotten very fortunate in where I've come from.
That's fantastic. What do you like more about internal? And what do you miss from agency?
Oh, the thing I miss most from agency is probably the friends that I made. Being able to work with so many different companies, you are never faced with the same problem on any given day. That variety was really exciting to me. But the downside of that is also the thing that I really like about being internal, which is building really good long-term relationships and seeing the teams that you build come to fruition. That to me has been the most satisfying piece back when I was at least in IC, and now even I'm still recruiting today. It's very satisfying to see a team really come together and see them work great together.
Yeah. Now, I've actually never been an internal recruiter, but I'm sure I could play one on TV. But does the box that you operate in as an internal recruiter feel slightly smaller than agency, where we get to shoot from the hip? And as you mentioned earlier, we are able to fire our clients, which obviously you can't do. So does that box feel a little bit smaller?
It feels smaller and bigger, but in different respects. Having the limitation of having to work with some people that you may not see eye to eye with, it's about building trust at the end of the day. And whether you do that with your clients and agency through the quality of the candidates that you're providing to them, or if you do it internally where you're actually at times trying to convince a hiring manager or division leader not to make a hire, and they look at you like, don't you want to fill this spot? And it's like, well, I want to fill the spot with someone that's going to be there for the long term and is going to help you to accomplish long-term goals. And when you can have that conversation with an internal person, that box becomes so much bigger because they don't just look at you as a delivery function. That, in my opinion, is the biggest misconception that people will have about a TA leadership role, at least actually, yeah, externally and internally, is that you're there to put a butt in the seat and you just want to get the position filled and then move on to the next thing. It's like, no, if you end up making a bad hire in agency, you're likely losing the client. And it's so much harder to get a client and then keep them as opposed to that. But in the internal world, all you have is trust. And if you're just trying to slam people in and they don't work out, 2 months later, that wreck is right back on your plate.
Right. Because the stakes are actually lower in agency because you can always go and get another client. But in internal, you're not selling. You're solving, right, from the word go. And if you don't go into internal with that mindset, you probably won't last very long, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. How's this tech recession impacted your recruiting function? And what do you see coming down the pike in 2024?
I've gotten very fortunate that ClickUp has been on a massive growth trajectory where I haven't worried about my role in the least bit or my team's role. We've gotten very, very fortunate in that regard. The tech recruiting industry right now is really scary. I probably see people, it used to be 3-4 times a week that would reach out to me seeing if I have an opportunity on my team. One of the good things that I'm seeing nowadays, I'm in a couple of networking groups where people are starting to ask for 6-month contract to hire recruiters to come and help them to build out teams. So we're starting to see that percolate. I have a theory on the layoffs that have been happening over the last couple of years. It's not really applicable now, but at least the ones that happened in 2022, a lot of companies found it so difficult during the beginning parts of the pandemic to performance manage people out and then ultimately go out and find their replacements. So they weren't doing as much of that performance management. So a lot of those layoffs, I feel, were a delayed culling of that group. There were a lot of really good people that also got caught up in that. I'm not saying that as a blanket statement, but the most frustrating part about it is you have hiring managers now that are like, oh, we get the cream of the crop and it should be so easy to go out and find these rock star candidates. Vast majority of companies have either retained their top talent or we're running up against 4, 5, 6 offers, because although maybe less companies are hiring, the ones that still are targeting that top tier talent. And you know that you found a good one when they went through a layoff and they've got 3 or 4 other offers that are currently in play. And it's about battling that misconception, right? You want to battle against the idea of anyone that was laid off or is not currently working is not an A+ candidate.
That's completely wrong. You're right, and that's wrong, because I talk to recruiters all the time who reach out to me, and there are some fantastic recruiters I know. Some of the best in the business were laid off because it was a CFO decision. It was a spreadsheet decision. It had nothing to do. And that's the difference between agency and internal, by the way, is that if you're really good at your job on agency, you're never losing your job. It doesn't matter how good you get internally. There's still a chance you might lose your job because, you know, you're a salary on a spreadsheet. And quite often the person who's making that decision may not even know you. They're just culling because they need to get some money back to their shareholders or something.
Yeah, I think another piece of it is just poor planning on the business part. People were growing so fast and they weren't thinking about the long-term pieces that came about from it. And it came back to ultimately bite them.
I call it irrational exuberance, which everybody just went hiring crazy. There were more openings on LinkedIn for recruiters than there were for software developers at one point. And it was the hardest skill set to find. And so, you know, and then that crashed. And a lot of the people who did move most recently from agency over to internal, they lost their jobs and they've either had to go back to agency. I know a couple who've rejoined agency, started their own companies, are working fractionally, but a lot of them haven't found their way back to work yet. And I think quite a few of them are questioning whether it's something they want to do again, because, you know, we're at the whim of the economy. The economy crashes, and then the first thing that happens is that TA gets decimated. And it's in a very annoying and irritating and inconvenient part of the job.
Yeah, there's highs and lows. Like I used to think of when I would get an agency pay stub and I got my first 5-digit commission check and was like, wow, I can actually make a fair amount of money doing this. And then the next month I would get no commission check.
Yeah.
And it's this massive roller coaster of emotions that comes about from it. I thought that was just agency when I was younger in my career, but that is the nature of what we ultimately do, is that you're going to have big highs and also low lows. And it's about how do you find that balance between the two of them? Because when you do get that good check, don't go out and buy all your toys. Save it for a rainy day as much as possible.
Good financial advice there, Jerry. Hey, how many people are applying to you without you even running ads at the moment?
I likely recruiters. Get 15 to 20 a week.
How do you respond to them?
Number one, it depends on how they're reaching out. If it's just a blanket, hey, I'm looking, here's my resume, I might respond with I'm not currently looking for someone. I did get a really great reach out. I had someone reach out to me on Reddit which was really, really wild. I was not expecting that at all. And they actually said, hey, you commented on this thing in woodworking because I'm an amateur woodworker, but you also commented in this thing in recruiting. I was wondering if you're currently hiring, if you're open to something, even if it's like a part-time thing. And I actually took the phone call.
Yeah, that's excellent. It's funny because it's actually kind of ironic, because the way in which a recruiter would reach out to you is indicative of the way they would behave as a recruiter professionally. And I've always been a big fan of personalization and really relevancy, staying relevant and reaching out and making a genuine connection with somebody. I spent a lot of time as a recruiter personalizing all of my outreach. And that's primarily because when people reach out to me, and it's clearly not a message that was pointed directly at me, but it's probably gone out to 1,000 people, I just delete it. If you're not willing to take the time to send me a personal message, I haven't got the time to talk to you. So as a recruiter who's maybe out of work, if I was to reach out to you, Jerry, and sort of say, hey, you know, I love your background. I see that you came from agency. Wow, you're in agency for a long time. I'd love to get a few minutes of your time. I'm not necessarily, you know, yes, I am unemployed. I'm looking for a job. But even if you're not looking, would you have 15 minutes for me? Is that something that you'd consider?
Yeah. I actually have a little gotcha at the bottom of my LinkedIn profile that Marcus, you brought up in my conversation with you, where I used to be a bartender before I fell into the recruiting industry. Like, the joke is nobody goes to college to be a recruiter, and I am no exception to that. And it's my recipe for a perfect margarita. And at the very bottom, it is a floater of the secret stuff. And I have had people reach out to me, say, I need to know what the secret stuff is. And I know that they read through my entire profile and they got to the bottom. I will entertain that person for a call just because of the creativity and the effort that they ultimately put in. Yeah. Now, if this comes out and I get 15 phone calls, I'll say the same thing, try something different. But I got a cold reach out from someone trying to sell software. And they brought up an article that I had co-wrote when I worked at Proven on how to negotiate a salary when you feel like you're getting underpaid. And they, in the first paragraph, they let me know, like, hey, I actually read this years ago and it changed my life. And when I came across you as a prospect, your name stuck in my mind. I'm really going to try and pitch you on something. I just want to let you know that up front. But I also wanted to thank you for writing that years ago, because it actually helped me to get a raise. I wrote back to that person and said, I'm not interested in buying your software, but that was one of the best cold outreaches that I've ever gotten. It was flattering. It was specific to me. And it actually made me feel like you did something that I hadn't seen before. Like, that person should probably get into recruiting because they got me to read that email.
That is brilliant. You could build a course around that one point: flattering and specific and relevant. Will always win the day. And when you're going after, whether it's recruiter candidates or software developers or finance and accounting, you know, when you look at those sort of 15 or 20% top candidates that you've sourced, it's such a waste of time to just send them a template and not attempt to personalize it and really make that connection, because they'll get back to you. People will get back to you if you are flattering without being obsequious, but observant of their whatever they do online, and you comment on their comments or their another great tactic is just to read the postings that people put online on LinkedIn, and to get in there in the comments and start to build some awareness of who you are before you go out and prospect with them. So there's a lot of different ways of doing this, but I think nobody wants to be sold to anymore. And the days of just basic transactional recruiting are somewhat over.
Yeah.
So anyway, moving swiftly on, I love asking this next question. One of the biggest challenges for TA leaders is to harness the full cooperation and partnership of internal stakeholders, who sometimes prefer to view the recruiting function merely as a service provider. What's the most effective way to combat this challenge so everyone is singing the same tune? The candidate experience is consistent, the interviewing is meaningful and properly scorecarded, and bias is reduced as much as possible throughout the process.
Calibration up front. One of my favorite quotes is from Abraham Lincoln. He said, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree and I'll spend the first four sharpening the axe. And getting everyone on the same page up front and figuring out what are we all looking for? Who is the decision maker ultimately at the end of the day? Getting that is absolutely critical. And then after that, so many recruiters, they go into an intake meeting and they see the job description and they're like, okay, you want these 19 things. Okay, I'll go out and find you someone that has these 19 things. My bigger question is asking them, who's the best person hiring manager that's currently on your team? What are the qualities that make them the best? Is it the 17, 19 things that you have on this job description? Like, take the job description out of it. Tell me more about things that you value in your top performers and let me go and find you someone that shares those values. That to me, like anyone can do a keyword search, but finding someone that has the intangibles that you cannot read on a resume, those are really the big ways where if you can build enough trust with your stakeholders and then provide them with someone where maybe on the resume it doesn't look like the perfect match, you're doing something that no one else can ultimately do. And you're finding that next top performer for them, which is really the linchpin hire that you need.
Totally agree with you. It's the same in agency recruiting. You're looking, throw away the job description and really question your client on their hot buttons. What is it that's really going to get you to hire this person beyond the skill set, beyond their experience? What kind of a person are you looking for? Their values, their journey? Because you'll never find that stuff on a good job description. You'll only find it when you build a proper relationship and really figure out what motivates that hiring manager to bring somebody on board. So I completely agree with that. Is it ever a challenge to get those hiring managers on board? Because as I said in my question, quite often they just, look, you're the recruiter. Just get some resumes over to me quickly. You know, I haven't got time for all of this. Do you ever get that or?
Yeah, you can have it fast, cheap, or what, not with good quality.
Right.
It's the triangle, if you will. And if someone wants to find the best possible candidates out there, but they only want to pay in the 50th, 40th percentile, like you're not going to find the best. I mean, what it depends on the sell and it depends on what the pain points of the individuals are, but that's management of expectations 101. And that for me, like when we talk about the candidate experience, especially, it's about humanizing the people. Like I really like looking at a candidate and getting excited about a candidate. And then I go back and I look at what the hiring manager's background is. And if I see that both of them have really, really strong tenure and massive growth within companies that they've worked at, maybe they've only, each of them have only worked at two companies, but they've got 15 years of experience. I will actually talk with both the hiring manager and the candidate independently about that commonality that they share. Be like, hiring manager, this candidate is probably not going to be the best at interviewing because they don't interview very often. Because they're really good and the companies that they're at try to keep them. So when you go into this interview, the candidate may not be as polished as someone that moves every year or two, but try to look past that because you share that same quality. And usually hiring managers will get that and understand that. And then when I talk to the candidates, I'm going to put them at ease and let them know like you're actually, you have that commonality with the hiring manager and they're not expecting you to come off as the most polished, affluent individual. Just go in and have an open and honest conversation because you already share that core piece of your background. It's like setting somebody up for a first date and letting them know that you both love dogs. You gave them a commonality.
That's an interesting lens to look at it through, where somebody might be incredibly good at their job, but not brilliant at communicating it and inexperienced in interviews. And interviews are always a bit, you know, they make anybody nervous. They'd make me nervous. I haven't interviewed for a long time, but yeah, I can imagine being very nervous in an interview, especially with a company that you desperately want to go and work for. And so having that sort of that setup where you're introduced to somebody who's already very good at their job, clearly knows what they're doing, but might not be a great interview. I think that's important to take that into consideration. I like that a lot. You mentioned tenure, and I've got some feelings about tenure as well. I don't think tenure is everything that it's cracked up to be, because I think it's an employer's responsibility to make their journey pleasurable and meaningful as much as it is for the employee to deliver on their promise as well. And then you've got all of the other factors that have happened over the last few years with the ups and downs of the economy and COVID. So a lot of people's resumes are just shot to bits right now. How important do you think tenure is?
I think it's important, but every resume tells a story. And if you understand the market and you understand what's happened over the last couple of years, like if I see someone that spent 10 years at a company and then in 2020, they had from 2020 to 2023, they've had four different companies that they've worked at. That seems like a product of their environment as opposed to their own personal decisions. And you have to lead with that kind of empathy. But also as recruiters, you have to get the core of that. Like if I'm going to do a 30, 45 minute initial conversation with a candidate, the vast majority of that is spent on why they've left their various roles, because it tells you more about the pain points that they obviously have. So if I hear this person's been laid off three or four times, I'm like, man, you really got the short end of the stick. Go take your time, do some research into us as a company. ClickUp, for instance, ServiceNow, whichever company it ultimately is, and then come back to me and tell me if it's something that you feel comfortable with. And if they come back to me after they've done some research and they've really looked into it, I now know that I can give them a little bit of direction and they're actually going to take it. And also that they're taking it seriously and they're passionate about it, as opposed to just shotgun blasting resumes out there and hoping that something's going to stick. I can make that push with a hiring manager and state that case if I have those positive signals.
Well, I think it's really important to educate both your stakeholder or your client in the sort of the world of tenure and what they're looking for, because I think a lot of clients and a lot of hiring managers, you know, they hire defensively. They've got their own careers to worry about. So they immediately sort of look at resume and go, well, no, this person's way too jumpy. So to your point, I think it's really incumbent upon recruiters to consider people who look a bit jumpy and then find out what the story really is, because it may be completely up the opposite of what you expect, especially, as I said, in the last few years. I've talked to some amazing candidates and recruiters, you know, who've been through the mill a bit over the last few years through no, you know, fault of their own. And as I think I mentioned, I know a lot of really good TA leaders and recruiters, good people who are out of work right now. It's incredible. So I just don't think you should judge a book by its cover, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Hiring managers, not as much, but one of my favorite, like this, I haven't thought about this in a long time, but there was a hiring manager that I supported at a previous place that was way over indexing on tenure. And I looked up their background and saw that they didn't have very good tenure either. And I said, okay, let me flip this on its head. Hiring manager, what were your reasons for leaving this company, and this company, and this company over the last 6 years? They had 4 moves in 6 years. I said, why did you end up leaving? And they said, oh, well, prototypical reasons. 2 of those moves were for money. And I said, okay, so how are you going to judge someone else on their tenure when realistically your own isn't? I prettied this up much more than I'm telling
possible?
You right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But like every single story is there to be told in a resume. And it's really about us digging into that and then asking the hard questions of the hiring managers as well. Like if he had really great tenure, I could understand why he would only want to see people with that strong tenure. And then it's a matter of like, do I feel confident enough as the candidate's representative to put my stamp of approval on it? Because building trust with a hiring manager, you only get so many of those. So that's where you really want to dig in with candidates to understand what that motivation was.
Yeah. I call it perfect candidate syndrome. A lot of clients, a lot of hiring managers have it. They want to hire the perfect candidate who looks perfect on paper so they can say to their boss, look who I hired. Aren't they amazing? And I think it just great hiring managers and great clients go so much deeper than that. And they actually take risks. They hire people who are moving into that position, not just people who've been doing that same job for the last 5 years somewhere else. I mean, who wants to make a lateral move anyway, unless you're paying a ton more money? And so I think, you know, creative hiring involves looking outside of the box at people who are moving into that position, who are trending towards being incredibly good at that. And probably, and this is a question that I have, are very, very hungry. One of my questions that I love asking people is, you can't teach hunger, but you can teach skills. Do you agree? And how does that inform your hiring decisions as a TA leader?
I do agree with that. The work ethic piece. I hired someone when I was in agency. His name is RC. That's his nickname. He was recruiting bank tellers, and we were recruiting, you know, directors of engineering. And I was introduced to him. He wasn't very polished. He was self-admittedly, he was like, I'm not the prototypical person that you would want to hire for your team. There is one thing that I will promise you, and that is I will outwork anyone else that you've ever met. And I said, I will take a chance on this person. He asked me what time I get into the office. And at the time I got into the office at 7 a.m., he beat me in office consistently over the course of the next month. And finally, one day I was like, what time does he get into the office? I showed up at 6:30 in the morning. He had been sleeping in his car in the parking lot, got there, worked out downstairs, and then got in his car and would take a 30-minute power nap before he ultimately went up. And I was like, this guy is worth investing in. And he ended up being extremely successful. But the other piece, it's not just a hunger, their ability to learn. If you invest the time in them, do they actually take those learning lessons and apply them? I was very thankful with a lot of people that they both had that hunger, but also I'd only have to tell them things once and they would go and they would run for it. Like those two pieces are really the two things that you need. If you've got those, you can do everything else. Enable them. Just let them run.
Yeah. My old boss, when I first came to the US, had a sign on his door, which is a bit corny now when I reflect on it, but I loved it at the time. And it said, "Don't come into my office with problems, come into my office with solutions." And so I remember saying to him, "Yeah, but what happens if I have a problem I can't solve?" And he said, "Look, all I'm saying is don't come into my office with no ideas. Come into my office with one or two ideas and I'll give you a couple more ideas as well. But just don't come in here with your, throw your hands up in the air and say, I don't know what to do, because that's not the person that I think I've hired." Coming to the table with energy and ideas is very, very important as an employee.
Even if those ideas are terrible ideas on how to solve the problem, at least you've taken the first step in trying to solve the problem. And I can, it's like when you do a math problem back in high school or college, right? If you don't even do anything, even if you just like write the answer, but you don't show any of your work, okay, great, you got it, but I can't follow your line of thinking at all. But if you show your work, even if you didn't get to the right answer, I can tell where you went wrong and I can turn that into a coaching opportunity. I tell people constantly, like, try to figure it out yourself. And if you're stumped, come to me with one or two ideas on how to fix it. And even if both of them are wildly off, at least we have a good starting point and I know that you've tried. That's a paramount thing for me.
So what's your outlook for internal recruiting in terms of how your strategy is going to sort of adapt to this new economy? For a while there, we were racking and stacking internal recruiters, then tons of people got laid off. And a lot of people that I've spoken to recently are looking at different ways to achieve a similar goal and to be able to flex up and down without having to lay people off all the time. What do you see coming down the pike on that subject?
I think you're going to see a lot more contingent recruiting. I do think that the agency market is still really strong out there. But on the internal piece, it's about being efficient as opposed to the volume hiring piece. Like, we as a company are growing quite a bit still, but we're being more cognizant about who we ultimately go out and hire and where we're actually putting the heads. So having an internal TA team that is really seen as a trusted advisor on whether we should or should not actually be making a hire, I think that you're going to see a lot less of the, oh, this person filled this many roles over the course of their time here, and a lot more of the, oh, this person was able to build a fully functioning team of extremely niche skill sets over the course of a period of time.
Quality rather than quantity.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that I think is going to continue to trend until we see the next gangbusters piece. And then we're going to be right back into the same situation that we were 4 or 5 years ago. But the main metric that I like to look at is how many people a recruiter sends to a hiring manager and how many of those make it through the hiring manager screen. Are you really respecting your hiring team's time? And then when you actually get them to offer, are you advising them on whether or not it's the best possible hire? I just got out of a debrief before I came in here and we were a little bit on the fence. And I said, who ultimately would want to advocate for this candidate? Do we get enough signal on the candidate where someone is willing to invest their time in them? And we had two people that were like, yeah, this person doesn't hit all the bullet points. Those two people were like, I would invest in this person. I would personally hitch myself to that wagon and help them be successful. And that's really what I needed to hear. And now they're on the line for it. But also the candidate is more set up for success if they end up accepting the offer, because we have people that are bought into their success. I think having TA move more into that advisement realm is extremely important.
That's interesting, because I've always said that on the agency side anyway, the most important metric of all is the percentage of your submissions that turn into first round interviews.
Yes, because, 100%.
Because that's scalable. Quality is scalable. Okay, volume is not scalable, but quality is scalable. So if you're getting it right, and you know most of your submissions turn into first round interviews, then that's gold. And that recruiter is worth developing and spending an enormous amount of time with, because you can then help them scale that approach and they can just become incredibly effective.
Not only that, but number one, the money is going to come. You're going to eventually get fills if you get enough of those pops. But number two, the biggest wishy-washy metric that I would have when I was in agency that you cannot really quantify, but if you were to call a hiring manager at one of your clients, number one, do they pick up? But number two, when they see that it's you calling them, what is the emotion that goes through their brain? Oh God, another agency recruiter is calling me, or this guy didn't deliver on my last one. Or are they calling me? I would have people pick up the phone and be like, Jerry, it's really good to hear from you. What do you got for me? And I know that I've built enough trust with them where if I'm taking their time, that they know that it's worth their time. Like that is the best intangible, because you're sending people to them that are hitting the nail on the head. And then it opens up so many more possibilities for you to send people that don't look great on paper, but it's like they have the X factor that you're looking for. You just need to talk to them. And if you can do that, whether that be internal or external, that in my mind, if I'm going to look for someone from a recruiting standpoint, that is probably number three that I would look for outside of the hunger and the ability to learn.
Yeah. I mean, that goes back to the point we were making about you can't teach hunger, but you can teach skills. And I think if you do have that relationship with your hiring manager or client and they trust you, you're a trusted advisor to them, you can easily say to them, look, this person does have a shortfall of skills, but that's a good thing, because he's not being recruited by five other companies who are looking for the same person as us right now. But what I've recognized in this person is an incredible hunger and an attitude that will easily, you know, solve whatever shortfall of skills he currently has or she has, and we'll be able to teach them those skills. But you just can't teach that incredible winning approach, can you?
No.
So going back to your sort of predictions about how internal recruiting is going to look 2024 and beyond, do you see more opportunity for RPOs and agencies to partner with clients, with organizations, you know, maybe like ClickUp, who are saying, let's take a more flexible approach to this so that we can flex up and down with the times, you know, keep that really strong core group of recruiters in place, but occasionally use an agency or an RPO or a fractional or a contractor?
I think it would likely go the contractor route. I know that ClickUp especially is in efficiency mode right now. And every time you go out and hire an agency, like I was always contingent agency, where, you know, if we get the fill, we get it. And usually what I operated at when I was an agency was 25%. It can be seen as just burning money by finance if you end up going about and doing that. I think that one of the big shifts that you're going to start seeing is longer guarantee periods. Like when I was an agency, it was a 90-day sliding scale, and some companies were like, there's no way that we're going to do that. And there needs to be a shared responsibility in the candidate or employee's success. Like in the same way where I wouldn't hold employee retention on TA, because the moment that they sign their offer and they get started, like our hands are off. And also, we're not the ones ultimately making the hiring decision. So at what point in time does the burden of success fall on the client, if you're an agency, or the hiring teams that you're ultimately supporting? And this comes back to the whole, like, are you trying to shove a square peg into a round hole? But the usage of RPOs, that whole piece to it is you can augment those things as long as you have the hiring managers and the finance partners that are really on board with it. Otherwise, go out and get a contract recruiter for 6 months. And maybe if you end up striking gold, you can make the case for converting that person. I think you're going to see a lot more of that.
Is there a way in which an agency could reach out to you and at least get a positive response and have a conversation with you?
I had one 2 weeks ago that reached out and said, hey, I, once again, a specific reach out to me. I know where ClickUp is at in their growth right now. I know you're probably not bringing on any vendors. If I was going to provide you with one person, who would that one person be? I said, okay, this would be someone that I would at least be open to the conversation on. And then they mucked it up because they sent me someone 3 days later that wasn't at all what I was ideally looking for. And I go, okay, just wasted time, done with it. But that reach out where I was able to give them that one carrot, like they had everything that they ultimately needed. That would be the way.
Okay. Well, taking ClickUp out of the equation here, just as a TA leader, philosophically here for a second, if I was to take a look at the opportunities on your website or on Indeed or LinkedIn that ClickUp or whatever company you're working for is currently looking to fill, and I took a really difficult one, like a data engineering position, and I just specced out a candidate to you and said, I'm not a vendor, we don't know each other, but I noticed you're looking for a data engineer. We happen to be sourcing for data engineers for a similar organization. You know, here's a profile of somebody who's currently available. Would you be open to having a conversation about how we might be able to help? Would that be an approach that might work?
It would, especially if they listen to this podcast and know how much I value the hunger piece and the ability to learn things, and they put in their pitch something specific to that trait.
Yeah.
That would tell me not only does this group know how to hunt and do their research, but they're not just sending out a candidate activity bulletin or like pitch notes to 15 different companies that are out there.
Right.
Also, if they end up saying like, hey, by the way, this data engineer uses ClickUp in their personal life or uses ServiceNow or whatever software it ultimately is that I'm going out and working with, like if they end up doing that, I know that they're specifically targeting me. And that is enough for me to be like, okay, I'm a little bit curious. They actually put in the time, so maybe it's worth me looking at.
Right. Again, hyper-personalization, flattery, and relevancy speak so loudly in all areas of this job. And you've just evidenced that in this conversation. So let's finish up on candidate experience just briefly here. Candidate experience is everything, as we know, because if you don't give your candidates a great experience throughout the whole interview and hiring process, you might not be able to close them because they might have several other jobs where they did get a great candidate experience. What are your thoughts on this? And what can you leave us with in terms of like how you have best engineered a candidate experience that resonates with everybody who interviews with you?
I think I'm still growing that here at ClickUp. One good thing about it is we have very, very passionate people that are here. But I think the ability to lay out the interview process at the very beginning and really have a strong, tight interview process is very, very important. The candidate experience, if you look at what candidates are really used to, they're used to getting a schedule via email and a good luck. That's it. I actually get on the line and I prep every single candidate for their final interview. And in that, I will walk them through their full schedule. I'll let them know who they're talking with, what that person's working relationship would be with them if they got hired, the focus areas. I won't give them the keys to the castle. I won't give them the specific questions, but I will give them an idea as far as what the focus area is and what the expectations ultimately would be, depending upon the level position that they're ultimately targeting. Being able to provide that to them, I had a candidate literally last week that didn't get the job that reached out to me after the fact and said that it was one of the most refreshing experiences that he's ever seen. And it's because of the fact that I actually spent the time to walk him through everything. It seemed like I was invested in his success. He doesn't interview very often. He's really nervous when it comes to interviewing. And the more that you can prepare someone for the interview walking in, the better likelihood, not of them just being successful, but of them being their genuine self. You can put people at ease and you can remove the nerves piece from interviewing as much as possible. Not only are you doing something that 99.9% of other recruiters don't do, but you're also helping to just nudge a little bit more of the candidate's ability to be successful. That, in my opinion, is a fantastic candidate experience. And that is something that solely is on TA. A lot of TA is subjected to the stakeholders that we work with. You know, I want to tack on 4 more interviews at the very end of a long interview process. Oh, God. But something that's directly within TA's control is how we prepare people for those conversations and the amount of time that we spend with them. And that's where it all comes back to the whole, are you a volume person? Or are you going out and finding 3-4 really good candidates and then investing the time in them? Because that's going to pay dividends so much more, not just in how many people you end up getting hired, but the trust that your hiring managers or your clients have in your ability to respect their time.
Yeah, indeed. I think it's very important to do exactly that and make an advocate out of everybody who comes through your hiring process. That should be the ultimate goal, whether or not they get the job. It's critical that everybody leaves the interview process, whether or not they get the job, speaking in volumes about your brand.
Yeah, that actually reminds me. I had someone interview with us 6 months ago that didn't get the job. And I called them. I let them know, hey, these were the areas that you ultimately fell short in. That person actually referred a month and a half later to other individuals that were in their network. We ended up hiring one of those people.
Brilliant.
That was wild.
That is fantastic. That's a great note to end this podcast on, Jerry. I really appreciate you taking the time today to come along and share some of your wisdom and insights into your role as a TA leader and your experience as a recruiter. It's been a lot of fun. wishing you a happy holidays, and we'll speak again soon.
Yourself as well, Marcus. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Cheers.